Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.8, the podcast where Michigan State does the walking and Michigan does the talking. Incident in the second half where play's over, it's been whistled, and a Michigan State defensive tackle is continuing to push on Cesar Ruiz. And Cesar Ruiz is in one of those lineman piles, and he's getting pushed back, and every time he gets pushed, it's like, this is dangerous. If he goes back further, that could be an ACL pop, and Mike Onwenu comes up and defends him. And we get the mutual unsportsmanlike conduct flags for a Michigan State player trying to take Cesar Ruiz out for the season. That's par for the course. But what's not par for the course is Mike Onwenu calling this jackass out on Twitter after the game. And that's where we are right now. When Michigan State has their walk at a special time that is not their designated walk time, and they want to be like, we are dominant. You have to get off of our field. And, you know, Devin Bush isn't going to do that. Devin Bush is going to reenact the fuck your couch sketch from the Chappelle Show. And after the game, Jim Harbaugh is going to say that was Bush League, and a pissed off Mark D'Antonio is going to lie his ass off about what happened.
You heard me.
And after the game, Chase Winovich is going to be like, this is my little brother. And then he's going to tweet, I apologize for ... absolutely nothing. That's the state of affairs. Go look back at the last 4 years. That is two ass kickings by Michigan that didn't quite have that reflected in the final score. That is one solid win by Michigan overturned by the most unlikely play in college football history, and one third string quarterback and five Michigan turnovers. What do you feel is going to happen going forward after 400 yards versus 93 yards? What do you think is going to happen when this trash program does their trash stuff and Michigan isn't going to back down anymore? Michigan isn't going to apologize for putting a stake in the field. Michigan is going to fuck your couch, and they are going to smile about it afterwards because they'll just dominate little brother. That is the state of affairs on October 21st, 2018. And this is the MGO Blog Podcast.
I think this is the end of the podcast.
This is the beginning of the podcast. We've got a lot more. We got a Purdue game to talk about,
folks.
So
if Mike Onwenu is finally to the point of where he's going to start talking, have we reached the grapes of wrath?
God.
Level?
That's a personal foul for unsportsmanlike podcasting, sir. That's terrible.
I was just following after the team.
It's really offsetting. We both got penalties for that one.
I'm very happy that you can do a Harbaugh class search on Twitter once again.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of angry people.
Yeah, especially Michigan State's media.
I love that interaction between Chase Winovich and Couch. And Couch is like, I didn't take any personal losses. Come on. If you were any more of a homer, you would be on the team.
Or he would be in the Michigan State media.
That's true. Bunch of enabling doofuses. Let's not sell this short. Like, this is a trash program, and their desire to beat Michigan and cover up sexual assault directly led to Larry Nassar, because that has been in their program for 20 years. You know, under Perlis, they're doing all the steroids they can possibly find. Nobody says anything about it until Perlis magically retires. And it's just something like, you know, the Bulla who's not playing in the Rose Bowl. Do we ever know what that's about? No, we don't. So the whole program, including the media around this, is trash. And Michigan needs to say, this is a trash program, and treat them like the trash program they are. So there we go.
It seems
fired up.
Finally be coming out.
It is.
Of this team.
But we should probably talk about the game. On offense, Michigan gains about 400 yards. Didn't really feel like a 400-yard day, but you have the one big hit to Donovan Peoples-Jones for 80 yards that basically ends things.
Which has been coming for ages against Michigan State.
Right, where they get the guy and he pops open big and it's like, catch the ball or throw the ball.
Yeah, or, well, they like to come up and play press. And, you know, they were doing that when during the rain. You can't really throw over them. But Michigan State used to do that all the time. Well, and they, we have clips upon clips of people open against that.
They were much more aggressive in this game than they have been for large portions of the year. And it was really frustrating because it felt like Michigan wasn't taking a shot.
Like, well, I thought the weather probably had something to do with that.
I mean, the weather was kind of intermittent, but we're talking about like most of the first half, there wasn't actually any rain.
Yeah.
Because they took a break. And there weren't any deep shots.
I think that Michigan thought that they could run the ball against Michigan State.
It turned out.
Because they kept running. I mean, it turned out that they kind of could.
Yeah.
Over the course of time, but they kept doing it. And I think that you could see that was probably the game plan, is we can move these guys enough to be able to run the ball.
And I just feel like you needed to take more deep shots. They had the one that Patterson missed, which was like a 20-yard completion to Eubanks, and
right.
Peoples-Jones is the only person on the other side
screamingly
of the field.
Screamingly wide
yeah.
open.
So a couple of hiccups there that could have been an issue. And then in the first half, during the extremely frustrating, we have the ball, it's at the Michigan State 40, and we can't get any points out of the section of the game. You know, there were two events. One was actually on the first drive, where it's 3rd and 3, and Michigan comes out in an unbalanced formation with a covered up slot.
Mm-hmm.
I think James Light tweeted about this, is that that formation got Michigan numbers to the weak side with no receivers.
Right.
And they run the arc keeper. It's going to be a touchdown, and Patterson doesn't keep the ball. And it's like, you see the replay and you're just like, ah!
And yep. I think that was the one in the press conference that Harbaugh referenced where he was like, that's the one time that I thought he made the wrong read.
Yeah,
the rest
of
his reads were good, but that was the one that he probably, if he makes the right read, he scores on.
And that's an excellent point, because we're talking about, you know, one of those Michigan State games.
Yeah.
And after they get the touchdown to Patterson, they have another touchdown drive. And on 4th and 2, Patterson's keeping it, and he's keeping it for another first down to get you set up and first and goal. And then Michigan on that drive has a couple more of those belly plays where they're able to move the ball because someone has to respect Patterson. And so that's, you know, the biggest difference in this game from last year's game, is that Michigan successfully incorporated a running quarterback when the passing game wasn't going that well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, both of the keepers were like camera fake-out keepers. So like,
yeah.
And when you're doing that, you're holding the ball in the basket long enough to like really make a sell. And I think maybe someone talked to him after the first one, because like he kept both of those quite a long time until someone had to commit, and that's when he made the move. And like, it takes a lot of practice to get it down to that level. So they've obviously been working on this for a long time.
Yeah, and they bring it out against Wisconsin, and they continue. It's just strange because nobody, whenever he pulls it, it's just over, because there's nobody on the planet.
But isn't that
who's
checking
him.
The point?
You'd think that after an 81-yard run against Wisconsin, like people would be like, all right, we got to check this guy. But it's 4th and 2.
Yeah.
And yeah, nobody checks
him. 4th and 2 is like, it's a sellout play where you're not like hedging conservatively. Well, what if this happens? What if this happens? It's kind of like, this is a we get off the field play and you take a shot.
But Michigan State just played Penn State, and they played Trace McSorley like a run threat. And they had that. They would rather have him hand off to running backs, and that's how they played that whole game. So it was a little weird to see them giving up. And Michigan had just shown it against Wisconsin.
And they did a really good job against McSorley's legs.
Yeah. Yeah, because they played McSorley. They played McSorley like the main run threat of Penn State, and they did not at all do that against Patterson, which was really surprising because Michigan State is usually very prepared for Michigan, and they had to have seen the Wisconsin game and known that this was really a threat.
Yeah, it's just the volume of Patterson pulls has not been high this year. And
it
so
hasn't.
While it's been put on film and it has worked, it's been about, what, less than 10 times?
I know, but that's a tactical win for Michigan.
Yeah.
They
no, it is. And that's what you have said all along, where you're like, if they can get a quarterback that doesn't have to be Denard, but can be Andrew Luck, where he, when he pulls, he's still a threat. You just don't have to do it very often. And that's seemingly kind of what they have now.
Well, and in particular in this game. So, you know, I put the post up from SB Nation about, you know, D'Antoni always beats the spread against Michigan. And that post had some kind of facile analysis about how this is a Harbaugh problem too. But it wasn't a Harbaugh problem, because we're talking about, you know, John O'Korn the game after the Purdue game.
Yeah.
So in the Purdue game, he looks like a functional human being. And Vegas sets the line based on the fact that Michigan has
a quarterback. And we walked into the podcast after that Purdue game being like, they might have a quarterback.
Exactly. And it, and so that's just an enormous false signal that you have to act on as a line setter. And then, of course, we have the defeat with dignity drive, where you score, you know, a touchdown with 1 second left, and you're playing that entire fourth quarter not to win the game, but to gradually get down the field and make it look better. And Michigan's permitting this to happen because that's the way to win the game.
Time is running out.
And then, of course, you have the punt. So, like, the supposed continuance of the D'Antonio thing was always built on a house of cards, and I think we saw that in this game because Michigan tactically defeated this team in multiple ways.
So Brian McKenzie rewrote his punt this week, which he's never done so far since he was, you know, ascended to the punt level. And he's his original one was all about the ghosts, and then he came back, and his new one was about how the better team almost always wins this game. There's only a couple instances where the better S&P team didn't win. So the reason why we were losing under Rich Rod and under Hoke was Michigan State was just a better football team those years. And the reason why, other than 2015, Harbaugh has done pretty well again, and you know, the O'Corn game.
Is, you know.
Yeah, in 2015. But other than the O'Corn game, when Harbaugh did not have a great team, he's been tactically, they've been prepared for Michigan State. They've been you know, facing Michigan State the way you're supposed to face them. They've been standing up to them. So,
well, how many twist blitzes did Michigan eat and just get killed on in this game? I don't think it was one, but it might have been one or two. That's a huge change from under Al Borges, when I think I counted 9 of them. Where Michigan, there were 9 separate plays that were completely destroyed by that simple blitz.
I don't think Michigan State wasn't running them nearly as much as they have in the past, too.
No.
Because Harbaugh owned them on that in 2015 and 2016.
Exactly. And, you know, it's you go back and you make some critiques of the coaching or criticisms in the DeBoard era, and then the kind of people who always defend coaches because they're like high school coaches and all coaches are right and anybody who's not been a coach is wrong, get on you. Mm-hmm. And it's very frustrating. And to see this, it's like, all right, this is what I was talking about. Like, I can see when somebody is completely overwhelmed. And in this game, it was not Michigan. So we should probably talk about Patterson's day as a whole.
So his statistics are 14 of 25 for 212, 8.5 an attempt, and 2 touchdowns.
And his rushing stats?
Was 8 for 24. I mean, that probably includes sacks.
It does include sacks. So,
but
I mean, that's good. I still, you know,
there's still a level he can go to.
Exactly.
But,
and it's,
I
not
mean,
even like a hard level.
This level is like definitely above acceptable.
I mean, so you have the 80-yard touchdown in there, and if that doesn't happen,
yeah, I mean, that's
that changes a lot of things. So those long,
that throw, man,
it's a good throw, but
that's a really good throw.
But getting the run after that throw is 50-50 at best, right? So if you just look at the stats, you're not really getting the whole.
I mean, that
he said. He said in the press conference, Shea was like, "If you're gonna put one-on-one coverage on DPJ, good luck with that."
I'm sure he said that, but
but he's not
but
wrong.
There was, there was
he's
a ta-
not wrong.
What I'm saying is, like, there was a tackle that could have been made there and was not made. Yeah. And that was a great play by DPJ, but sometimes that tackle gets made, and then the stats here look not as great. So this is a game where maybe. It's not. I mean, Patterson was able to get certain things done and did enough, but you gotta, like, that waggle before the field goal where he's got DPJ and DPJ has some separation, and he's not pulling the trigger there. And it kind of goes back to what I saw last week, where he had guys, but he just didn't want to pull the trigger.
Well, his first touchdown was ballsy. His first touchdown, that throw to Collins in the back of the end zone, because you know, if he's waiting one more second for the from McCune to come open against the linebacker level. I mean, that was the play. But he sees Nico there, sees he's got an inch to throw it, and just throws it.
I think that was – Klatt thought that was the primary read.
Is that what he – okay.
I mean, you can never tell these things.
Yeah, my watch of it was that, you know, Collins is supposed to pull the linebacker off of McCune's crossing route. McCune's supposed to be the – you know, where you expect that one to go. But, I mean, he stayed on Collins long enough. It's all the things that he hasn't done before. He hasn't stayed on his reads long enough for them
That's
to come
true.
Open.
That's a good point.
And then that was not there most of the rest of the game.
I thought he had a few guys that he just kind of, in the area that we're talking about of where the offense didn't really do anything, where they had the really good field position. There were a couple of times when he had checkdowns or he had a tight end and just almost like he didn't like it well enough and like wanted to buy time to see if he could get something else.
And he threw two passes that his receivers had to do some work on.
Yeah.
So there was an interception that Perry raked out. And then there was the deflection to Gentry. And that's the other thing. There are two deflected catches on that stat.
Yep.
And so Peoples-Jones has to reach out because
both for first downs, I believe, on maybe third downs.
And I was like, oh, that's illegal touching. And then I was like, oh, wait.
He wasn't
the first person to touch it, so he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Which is a weird rule when you think about it.
Yeah, the Michigan State fans in the building were audibly not believing in that rule.
It is weird, though. It's like, who cares if someone else touches it? You went out of bounds voluntarily. You have ended your participation. But it's like, no, once the plinko happens, it's all on the table.
Well, it's like the fumble through the end zone.
There's probably some
It's a much better rule.
I'll ask Craig Ross why that rule exists, because I'm sure something happened in 1940.
With the Vikings?
Yeah.
And the other thing we have to consider is this was a weather game. So for large chunks of the second half...
It was most definitely a weather game.
I mean, for large chunks of the second half, Patterson is in this weird kind of misty situation where the ball's a little wet and he's got a glove on and it's just... So maybe some of those were weather-related. There's certainly a point in this game where every Michigan fan was in the black pit of negative expectations.
And the footing was probably never great.
Yeah.
I mean, there were multiple instances where that was the case.
So this still feels like he's not quite there. Like, there are a lot of things that I would hope that a junior quarterback would be able to get done that he's not. But the third touchdown drive that was based on his legs and was able to open up some of the Michigan's ground game because of the threat of his legs is something that I don't think a lot of pocket passers with the ability that Patterson have can provide you. Like, for a guy with his downfield accuracy and overall throwing ability to also be able to do that is pretty uncommon.
He is definitely a danger man now. He is a guy that, like, other teams have to account for. He's a guy that you can go and win games with.
I mean, they don't have to account for him, apparently.
Right, but, like, they were doing that whole game manager talk and where, like, Patterson's calling himself a game manager. I think he needs to open it up a little bit more. But I think he's still on that progression. I don't know how much coaching he got in the finer points of quarterbacking at Ole Miss. So...
Or the differential of routes and stuff like
that. Yeah, so there's a progression in a quarterback where he starts, like, first he has to get comfortable with his reads, and then he kind of has to feel like he knows where things are going to be, and then you become a killer. And he doesn't have that, I'm going to get this guy, or I know what's going to get these guys. And I think that comes along slowly after you've gotten past the point where he's at now. You can go and win a lot. Where he is now, but that killer is going to either show up this year or, I don't know, maybe he's still around next year.
There are games left on the schedule for that to happen.
I mean, I know he wants to go to the league. Everybody says that.
Yeah.
But the way he's playing right now, it's like, okay, you're probably a mid-round pick, but your upside if you come back is pretty high.
Yeah.
So that's what I would hope happens is because he's just about to click. And he hasn't quite yet, but we'll see. I think we've taken enough time on the passing game. Now, on the running game, Michigan comes in against the number one S&P plus defense against the run in the country.
Which you thought was a little bit of a mirage.
It was. I mean, you thought it was a little bit of a mirage, too.
Yeah.
Wasn't the volume really low on runs faced or something like that?
Well, so everybody except Penn State that they faced was 71st or worst, and most of them were like around 100th. I think Northwestern is 126th.
Really? Yeah. Really the only other offense that can run the ball at all that they've faced is Utah State, and they're like in the 70s.
Right. So they got kind of a pass, and Michigan was able to... I mean, they're good, but Michigan was able to grind them down. And, you know, the thing that kind of leapt out to me is the touchdown drive, mostly on the ground, and then they get the ball back, and they peel off, what, 6 minutes a clock on a 13-yard drive?
It was a nine-play, 13-yard drive.
Right. Nine plays, 13 yards, 6 minutes and 41 seconds.
And there's, like, one of those, like, phantom unsportsmanlike conduct penalties that ends that drive. I think
so. It was like 30 yards, but it
so like Higdon gets like a personal foul for standing up and perhaps accurately describing various aspects of the Spartan program.
Maybe it was on the logo.
He called the guy a Spartan.
Possibly. But so that drive is two first downs, and then they're kind of grinding towards one when some penalties kind of trip them up. And Michigan is not – there's no pretense that Michigan's going to throw. And they're able to beat these guys off the ball and fairly easily convert some first downs. And that, again, goes back to Patterson holding guys outside because Belly is a big part of that.
They took a false start on that drive, too. So they had like a second and 15.
Right.
Second and 12. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they get like to third and short, and then they get the
right.
big penalty. So it's coming along. I mean, this was going to be the toughest run defense Michigan faces this year. And what were Higdon's totals? He had like 30 carries.
33 for 144, about 4.4 carry.
So that's without...
He had a long of 38, so...
Yeah, he had the 38-yard run
that was early.
And he makes that himself, which we haven't actually seen like a lot of.
Two tackles.
Like, Hayden's very good at maximizing what happens once he gets a crease, but we haven't really seen him make something out of nothing very much this year. So he makes that out of nothing, but the rest of it, it's like... There's not a huge... Like, a 38-yard run and 33 carries is not like... I had the one very long distorting thing, like the DPJ catch. So... I think that's a fair representation. I bet their line yards are going to be real good.
Yeah.
And
especially in the second half, again. And this just goes back to the thing that I brought up a little bit last week, where it feels like 90s Michigan football again, where you run the ball a lot, but by the second half, you're just pushing people around, and all of a sudden, now they're getting no push, and you're getting 2 or 3 yards per carry before you really have to do anything.
So 41 minutes to 19 minutes in time of possession is... You're in a rain game when you're ahead most of the game is not just it's not just by per play and wearing guys down. It's being able to control when you have an opening in the rain where you actually get to do something. It's more opportunities to have a big play pop out. And they killed the fourth quarter. Like a lot of this game was spent up 7 points, and Michigan State didn't have a chance to do anything weird.
Yeah, being able to kill the clock like they did on their third touchdown drive and then the 4-minute drill drive that was actually 6 minutes is a really valuable skill. So, when they're trying their dignity drive at the end of the game, it's much better that there's 2 minutes in this game than 4 minutes. Because if they score, they're kind of down to it, even though they did score. And so that is an important thing to do.
Yeah, they did it in the first half, too, where they kind of brought Michigan State down to...
Well... Yeah, there were a lot of things they did in the first half that were a little bit unintentional.
I was just going to look at it, see if you guys saw anything on the offensive line specifically, because a couple of things happened, like with the JBB injury when he didn't come back, and if you noticed anything in terms of that they were doing differently, because we usually talk about plays.
That's something that I need to do the UFR to really have an accurate take on. I mean, I know that Runyon was one of the better graded players per Pro Football Focus. You saw the thing where Michigan drops back and there's a lot of time usually. Like, Willick has got a pressure or two, but other than that, nothing.
Right, yeah, that's the other thing I was thinking is they didn't... Like, Patterson had to leave the pocket eventually a couple of times,
yeah.
But it didn't seem like the pass pro was real bad. I saw that I think JBB got beat once around the edge and gave up a sack.
Yeah.
But other than that, I wouldn't...
There was not a lot of inside by Willikies one time, and I thought Raekwon Williams was legit against the interior.
Yeah, he's a good player, and the thing that leapt out to me is one of the, I think he had a tackle for loss where Ruiz thinks he's got him, and then he's slanting past into another gap, and he does that really quickly. Like, he's legit.
He got Higdon in the backfield, Ruiz let him go.
Yeah, I wondered if that was
They were bringing the tight end back on a trap block, and he was too quick for the trap block. But that's something better for later in the week when we have more time to look at stuff. The last thing I want to touch on before we head to the defense is Michigan's final touchdown is Ben Mason from the 5, and he's untouched. I mean, that's the exclamation point. The murder face touchdown where your old school Michigan line just beats him off the ball and Mason can basically run through maybe one arm tackle.
And yeah, I enjoyed it that it was at that end of the field, too.
Was that the student section?
Oh, yeah.
Were they even there at that point?
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Before we get into the defense, we'd like to thank our sponsors. They are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshire Landing, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. Other than 93 yards, the thing that leaps off the page that I have written on is that there wasn't really a scripted drive for Michigan State.
I'm still waiting for that July drive.
Right? Like, maybe they just kind of spent it all against Penn State because, you know, they have the bad loss. Everybody's kind of feeling very bad about the team, and they get like the fake punt and then the throw from Hayward, and maybe they just spent it all there.
They did run that Philly special or whatever.
Yeah, right? That's like a trick play you have, and maybe it works. And maybe
they ran that against Penn State too, though. That was already on film.
Well, no, because it wasn't the quarterback against Penn State.
No, it was they ran that same thing against Indiana. They ran that against Indiana. That
but
same one, though.
You're running a trick play from the 7 yard line.
That was a four.
It was a 4 yard. Okay, well, yeah.
LJ Scott, he almost scored, and then Bush had probably his best play of the day where he's able to cut through the trash and tackle the guy.
Right.
Yeah. So,
you have to call a trick play from the four to score. Like, to me, that's a big thing.
Right. Because if you're calling a trick play from the 30, you got a ton more upside, right?
Sure, but like you should be able to move the ball 4 yards or something, and they need to.
Well, but clearly Michigan State cannot.
And that's my point.
Okay.
So thank you for getting there for me. They needed a trick play.
Fired up. Dave's fired up, people. So the other thing that kind of leapt out to me is that there were a ton of opportunities for Michigan State to get kind of a ticky tack pass interference call for them. But none of them came out until Amber Thomas got hit on their dignity drive.
Were any of those catchable?
Many of them were not, but sometimes, you know, I expect that good, fair coverage gets flagged periodically.
Yeah, because you're going to have some little bit of trading.
And for various reasons, you just didn't see that, and that's because I think Michigan's cornerbacks won so emphatically that they didn't have to.
Is that because Rubin is racing?
There were some Rubins being racing, but mostly they were just over the top of routes and they'd won. Like, there was one that they tried to throw to Felton Davis, and I think it was long, was just over the top of it. And if you remember some of the calls from, I think, the SMU game, where he's won over the top and he's like, all right, well, I got to turn now, but he's technically still engaged with the guy with the balls in the air. That was getting flagged against SMU. I was extremely crotchety about those calls.
Yes, you were.
And we didn't see the similar calls in this game, and I think that's the way football should be officiated. You have a right to your position.
Yeah.
If you win over the top, you win. So Michigan did that consistently in this game, and then a broken version of Brian Lewerke was just turfing everything else.
So
he came out
and said that he was nowhere near 100% after the game or something like that.
Yeah,
and Scott Bell said 5 divided by 25 is definitely not 100%.
But his offensive coordinator said, yeah, he practiced all week. And then D'Antonio was like, no, I didn't practice.
Yeah, they changed the story. You heard what I said.
So
what else is new?
Yeah, man.
I think the other thing that is going to be a little bit overlooked is, guess who didn't play yesterday?
Rashawn Gary?
Yeah. So all of this was without Rashawn Gary.
Well, I mean, they've completely destroyed two quarterbacks in a row without Rashawn Gary. And a large part of that is Josh Uche, who had 2 sacks in this game. These were like legit, I beat a tackle sacks, not the Wisconsin sack, which was a freebie.
Yeah, he went right around Chewins, I think, the one. Yeah.
And he's got 5 on the year, which leads the team. And early in the year, we're like, this hype isn't panning out. And now it's like, yeah, let's get this guy on the field. And it kind of seems like between Uche and Pay, they have Gary's run defense and pass rush just not at the same time.
So if we can duct tape them together.
I don't think that would make them better football players.
Maybe not. 3-legged races are generally slower, I think.
Yes. Boy, that should be an Olympic event.
3-legged pass rush?
No, just racing. Just, they should make all the stupid, like anything that looks dumb.
Like the carrying the egg thing?
Yes, that's yes.
Yes.
Anyway, we've digressed slightly.
Sack races.
That's a good one, too. So I thought, you know, Uche is a guy who now feels like Chase Winovich 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't get much playing time, but you can just kind of see it coming. The problem for him is he's 240 now after, like, a big blow-up. Can he get to 255 and be a weak side end? Because that's what he should be.
What he is has been incredibly effective. Don Brown has been creating Gary in the abstract for years because he's never been able to get a Rashawn Gary until like the end of his Boston College career.
So what I'm saying is, like, right now he is fairly limited.
Right.
He can't play on rundowns.
Right.
And that limits his overall impact. So can you get him to that Winovich, I'm a little bit undersized, but absolutely relentless weak side end spot?
You never know when you put pounds on guys what they're going to be, but there is definitely a possibility that he could be that. If he's not, we got Pay, we've got Hutchinson.
Hutchinson's probably more the weak side end. Pay is the strong side end.
At this point, I think both of those, their best position long term is going to be anchor.
Okay.
And, you know, if one of those guys is on the weak side, it'll be fine. But you don't have the killer pass rusher from either of those yet. Hutchinson might actually get there. He's done well.
Keep in mind, too, I mean, you don't see it that often anymore, but against really spread teams, against teams that really care about the zone read option, a guy like Uche is very effective as a weak side end. Ojemudia Moody was like the last guy we had like that.
Yeah, that's actually something that is in his recruiting profile because he had a lot of impressive, like the quarterback has kept the ball.
Right.
I'm shuffling, and now I'm going to go make a play. So
right.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. I think I had a whole article about him afterwards about why I was excited about him and why he's so effective against spread teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a Winovich play, back to the like where he just chased a guy to the sideline and
It was Winovich
and Ross.
Ross.
And Ross actually made the play in the end, but Winovich had him all the way. It would have been like a 3-yard gain, and Ross made it a 2-yard gain.
It was one of those counterpunch pitches where, you know, they fake it inside and then it's a pitch outside.
Right. Winovich also two-gapped a guy blocking him on the edge. Like, not on the line, but when he got outside, where he's getting outside, and he just kind of grabs the guy and, like, jumps outside, and then Lorky jumps inside. So he jumps inside, and, like, they're just... And then the rest of the guys came over. I thought that was as good a play as he made all day, just being able to stop something that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. So Patrick Barron is trying to make this happen. And I think
I told him I would try to get this on the podcast.
I think it should happen.
I think it was really an intelligent C by him, I thought.
I think that Patrick wants the act of having more points than an opponent has yards is a Rutger.
In different segments.
Well, there's like the whole Rutger.
Right.
And then there's the rushing Rutger and the passing Rutger.
I think a whole Rutger would be unbelievably impressive.
Michigan had a whole Rutger against Rutger in the 78-0 game.
But the
78-0 game,
Rutger got Rutgered 3 times that season.
So the this is awesome. Thank you. So the 78-0 game was actually a double Rutger because they had 39 yards. So the double Rutger is like way out there. But
that's
a
Rutgers.
That's like the ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they get.
That's a Rutgers. So in this game, Michigan State had a rushing Rutger.
Yes.
Yep. All right.
Where Michigan had 21 points and Michigan State had 15 rushing yards.
Now that's NCAA, so they probably didn't have the, like, you know. But
sure.
We don't care. Rushing Rutger.
It's a rushing
after
Rutger.
After the Tevin Gardner stuff, this is a rushing Rutger.
If we have to hear it, then they're going to hear a rushing Rutger.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was with the Wildcat stuff with, like, Ladarius Jefferson and Hayward?
My theory on that is that they wanted to mention that they got the top overall recruit in the state of Michigan by putting him out there.
What? Ladarius Jefferson was not the top overall recruit.
No, but he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Michigan, one definition of that, which is good enough for Michigan State to put it.
That's crazy.
In their game notes.
I know that I just had like a crazy rant at the beginning of this podcast. That's insane.
Michigan State is insane.
No, that's not.
It was in the game notes. It is prominently placed in the game notes that they take like the best player in Michigan every year, and then they have a different definition for it for every single guy.
He had 2 carries for 4 yards.
So the thing is, you have Brian Lewerke, and the guy can
kind of.
He can run.
He could run. He had like 60 rushing yards against us last year or something.
Last year.
Like, and they don't even try. Like, this is your put it all on the table, and I think they have like 1 option play or something. And I was expecting Lewerke to get, like, 12 carries in this game. Just because what else are you going to do?
Well, he didn't practice all week.
Even so, like, got to put it on the table. And they didn't. Absolutely did not. Another tactical dub for the Harbaugh era.
Taking away the opponent's maybe best strength.
Right. You know?
Their quarterback's legs. Certainly it wasn't his arm.
No, he had opportunities to hit some guys. Like, Long got beat on a couple of slants, and he just put it right in the turf. He was beyond awful. Like, even in one of his completions, I think Stewart had to dig it out for, like, a 15-yard gain.
And they probably do get several PIs if he actually is on target for any of those ones that go long.
I don't think several. I think a couple, and I think those would have been invalid. Like,
he had a lot of balls that ended up out of bounds.
Well, he's also, nobody's getting any separation.
Right.
And
especially once Davis was out.
Yeah, but even when Davis is in, it's like they bracketed him a little bit. And
well, he had a ball that hit him in the hands, and then
that first one, yeah,
Metellus woke him up a little bit.
So there was like the weird section in the beginning of the game where Hayward makes a one-handed diving stab at a slant that he brings in.
Because obviously.
And I'm like, here we go. And then the next play is like probably their best passing play of the day, where it's like a 20-yard shot over the top on a double move to Davis, and Davis just kind of punts it out of bounds and then gets lit up by Metellus.
Who, like, skip hops back to the huddle.
Because, you know, Metellus is just like, flag, flag, flag. Nope. Skippy, skip, skip.
He felt pretty good after.
Somebody retweeted that this morning, say, walking into work, like.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. So there's not really that much to say when the opposition gets 93 yards. Like, they couldn't do anything, and that was the end of the story.
No, Canal came down, I thought, had a really good stuff on a jet sweep. Like, he's been, in the past, a little iffy on coming down and making tackles and hitting the right angle, and I thought that was a really nice play for him.
All right, you have anything else?
No, I mean, once they lost Felton Davis, it was over.
Yeah.
At least in the air.
I liked the contrast between Michigan Twitter when Felton Davis went down, which is like, that sucks, and Spartan Twitter when Devin Bush
went
down.
Oh, jeez. It's just, I'm almost to the point of where I don't even want to talk about that stuff anymore, because I know it needs to be talked about and all
trash
that. It's
program.
Just, and you're not wrong. It's just like, this is my level of expectation now for this. So expecting anything other than that would be a shock to me.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and there's actually quite a lot of special teams in game theory in this one. Most of it very yelly.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Shouldn't have come here, you changed your fate. Your brains will make the debut on the table when I raise the stakes. The pain is great, but only for a second. It starts strong, the lessons just when you rested. The Armageddon sets in, left him a sober stress. Blessed him with no regrets. Welcome to hell, son, the threshold of death. Face the serpent, I blaze your person, you get laced for certain. Even Jake's no trace to work from, close the case to curtains. I'm hurting, head severely, really trying to bring the pain. There's nothing more satisfying than when you're crying and screaming my name. It's not a game, it's purple rain, floods of bloodstains. Big one's my thug's name, busting my guns, that's my love thing.
Yelly.
You can't punt on 4th and 5 from the opposition 38. You can't punt from 30 anything. Michigan does it twice in this game from the 38 and then the 35. That punt actually comes from the 40.
So we need to look at each of these because they're all very different situations. And the third one, I think, is the one you're referring to.
The third one.
The third time that they got down to about the 40-yard line in that, like, 10, 8-minute window or whatever it was.
And the third one was the field goal that missed.
The third one was the punt, and then the field goal came after that. I believe there were four.
Anyway, say what you're going to say.
Well, the first time they get down there, it's they punt from the 40, and that was the one I defended because I thought that with the way that the game was going and how their offense was, how Michigan State's offense wasn't moving the ball, and it was like 4th and 10.
It was 4th and 10.
And it's just like, I don't like punting there, but like they didn't have an offensive play that looked like they're going to pick up 10 yards. And I just didn't want to give State the ball like the 40-yard line if Nordine doesn't make the field goal.
I wanted the field goal, but then of course he comes in, he has the field goal, and it's like there are probably good reasons.
And that was the fourth drive that he missed the field goal that almost kind of to an extent validates the punting of the previous three drives.
No, because you can't punt on 4th and 5 on the opposition
from the 38.
You can't punt.
So you'd rather go for that.
You have to go for that.
Okay, that one. Okay, that one I will cede to you. The first one, you're going to have to pry it from me. The second one, I'm not really sure. That one, honestly, I didn't...
Fourth and five. There was an 18-yard net punt.
Yeah.
That one was the last one, and that was the worst one.
That one is indefensible. The first one, okay, I can see
okay.
it.
And none of these...
But like, what I think they should have done on the first one is they should have run a play on 4th and 10 that's like a screen, or I mean, 3rd and 10.
Yeah. And like, the play calling... And both of those two drives, when they get to about the 40, 38-yard line, I was like a little...
I felt like that was the point, like, you should be pulling out some razzle-dazzle.
Yes.
Like, if you have it, you're kind of in this lunky game against a hyper-aggressive defense. Like, this is the time to have a throwback or Buffalo Stampede or even a good screen or two.
Yeah, because at that point, it's 7-0. If you can push this to a 3-score game in the first half... It might be. It's probably it. I mean, and they were on the verge of that several times because they're pushing down the field and just couldn't get a second score, which obviously then you can't get a third score. But that was my...
That was your take?
Yeah, on that part of it.
The other major event in the special teams department was the man who defiantly did not have trouble with the snap.
Michigan State's greatest punter ever.
Like, this guy's terrible.
That was a better catch.
The guy who's averaging 32 yards this year, and then saves 80 yards on that play.
Well, he
probably 2 points.
I mean, the rugby punting that they were executing was highly dangerous because there was a good chance that he was going to whack one of his blockers in the back.
He was shooting them through the line. I watched a Boise State game,
but it was
three or four years ago, where a guy punts a ball and it's blocked by a linebacker for Boise State who has his back turned.
Yeah,
and he didn't
that.
Even know what happened.
Yeah.
That happened about 2 or 3 times in this game.
It did, but it worked. Like the I didn't have trouble with the snap punt was 59 freaking yards. And DPJ,
That one he rolled out. One of them he literally kicked back through massive body.
I know, but he was trying to do the same rollout thing. And this raining, so DPJ is like, I can't touch these.
Yeah.
This is the dumbest thing in the world. So, I mean, they were able to get a huge field possession advantage after, like, the first couple of changes of punts in the first half were big Michigan advantages.
Right, because they were, like, actual punts.
And then they start doing this rugby stuff, which they should have been doing all year. And he's just... I mean, I guess he's not blasting it, but he's...
Does the rain, like, negate bouncing on punts to where it doesn't really matter what the spin is on the ball because the ball isn't really going to attract anyway? It's just going to skid?
I think it makes you less likely to want to field it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not really... You're not going to get a backspin on a rugby punt in the rain.
If you're doing it in a nice day and it bounces up and then the guy catches it, you just gave him a line drive and there's 20 yards before he reaches anybody.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying that when there's water on the grass, isn't the ball just going to kind of skid instead of like...
I don't think it's necessarily going to... I mean, they water soccer fields so that the ball moves better.
Yes.
So I think that's probably a thing.
Okay.
That's what I want to say. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So that was another way that Michigan State avoided getting absolutely hand-blasted in this game, that they were able to overturn what looked like was going to be a huge field position advantage.
Nice catch.
My God. And that's like kind of one of those moments where you're just like, I think that was 7-7.
Yeah.
And like, this is B-Pone, man.
I mean, somewhere Jason Avant is going, that's good, bro.
Well, and there had been fumbles.
And he was, because he's a nice guy.
He was a really good guy.
He's one of the nicest guys.
So that was the part of the game where, like, Michigan fumbled and State ties it up. And then Michigan State fumbled on their on a return.
Yeah.
And then Michigan fumbled that right before they were about to score. That was the when Higdon slipped and rammed the ball with his helmet instead of.
Yes, that was the moment where I didn't throw my mug, but I did throw various baby clothes across the room.
There were several hats thrown at the television.
I was not proud of my behavior, but I wasn't unproud. Because it's just so satisfying to see something shatter into a million pieces in your anger, but I didn't do that.
Yeah, so it's that part of the game where that punt comes out, where, you know, they're at 4th and 11 on their own 22, and then all of a sudden it's flipped and Michigan's backed up again, and we just fumbled the last two drives away.
Yeah.
Michigan goes 3 and out really ugly on that next drive, and that was kind of like the, oh my God, here come the ghosts.
Yeah.
And what got us out of that was, you know, the drive after that.
It's just the
DPJ.
Pass. Yeah, it's just one play. DPJ, yeah.
The other interesting thing was, I believe Michigan State had the ball around the 30-yard line and were stopped on third down, but Harbaugh accepted a holding call.
Yes.
And that essentially pushed them. I mean, I don't know what field goal range in this game was, if there was field goal range, but I thought that was interesting too. And so somebody tweeted, I can't remember who it was, but was like, this is what Harbaugh thinks of Michigan State's offense, is I will give you another shot.
Well, it was a 15-yarder too, so it was like third and 25, I think.
I thought it was just 10.
I think it was a 10-yarder.
Yeah.
But hey, it went from like a 28 to the 38.
I mean, that I think that was the right move, just given.
No, sure, it was. It just, that was kind of funny to see him just being like, no, give him another shot. We'll take the 10 yards.
I think he's done that in a lot of games. Like, I think that's his default move, especially when you have
with
Don Brown's
this
defense.
Yeah.
Should I talk about Marcus Ray? I'm genuinely asking you. I don't have to do it.
Chase Winovich is doing it for you right now.
All right, so, like, I don't have a lot of tolerance for Carr era players who aren't on board. And I think a lot of the problems that Michigan had through the 90s was because of the Carr era players who thought that they were the entire program. And, you know, they're yelling about Rich Rodriguez before. That's probably appropriate. I think they're a big factor in the fact that Michigan hired a Carr era assistant who happened to be one of the worst football coaches in America in Brady Hoke. And now Harbaugh comes in and it's like, all right, let's get on board. And then they beat Michigan State. It's like, all right, let's get on board. And, you know, Marcus Ray's on Twitter talking about how Purdue, which lost to Eastern Michigan, is 4-3, is the best team in the Big Ten. And he does this consistently. Like, he was on TKA for a while, and then they had to boot him because everybody hated him. Because his takes are not just anti-Michigan. They are dumb beyond belief. So I don't got a lot of tolerance for that guy.
They are dumb beyond Marcus Ray.
I mean, like, I don't...
He's doing that on purpose.
I don't care if he's doing it on purpose.
I think it's worse. I think it's... I have more respect for an idiot who's just wants to get the sports pontifications out there to other idiots than somebody who is intelligent enough to know he's full of shit. Yeah. And then he is... And he's still saying it because he thinks that's how he gets noticed. This is going to get him on Michigan Twitter.
Yeah.
And then he thinks he represents... Where he's like
the players. Like, I played the game. Like, buddy, you played the game 20 years ago.
I don't know a lot of the guys he played with, but I know a lot of the guys who played after he played.
Yeah.
And they are not like that at all.
No, they're super nice.
Yeah.
So, like, Braylon, shut up. Marcus Wright, shut up. Like, it's time to get on board with the program and not just bash people. Like, criticizing people, critiquing people, fine. But, like, the kind of stuff where you're talking about how Michigan has no heart, shut up. That helps nobody. And it's disrespectful to the current players. And, frankly, I'm done with it.
Michigan has two Heisman winners from the 90s who are very vocal who are very visual in the media. You see Woodson all the time. You obviously see, every week, you're seeing Desmond Howard.
Right.
Both those guys are very pro-Michigan, don't make bones about it and don't attack the program for anything.
I mean, like, those guys could have had jobs on BTN if they weren't just assholes.
Yeah. But I think I think Braylon thought he could do it too, just by being an ass, that he'll get more notice and that's how he gets a BTN job.
I don't think Braylon does it on purpose.
Braylon doesn't either.
I mean,
both of them, I've met both of them before.
And
they're both smarter than
that. I know that this is going to get pushback from parts of the fan base that are like, he played, you didn't play. Well, who's damaging the team? Is it me? No. So I have no tolerance for that. All right, we're done.
Okay, so now we can talk about the sad timeouts. I didn't even pick it up.
It was like a thing.
Dude, I didn't even pick it up. Somebody tweeted at me and was like, Nasty Island, those are sad timeouts.
That's his Twitter handle, by the way.
And I told him, I will bring this up on the podcast. Those are sad timeouts.
That's true.
There were two of... So, people had cleared out of the press box, and when they were on their... penalty drive, I guess we're going to call it.
The dignity drive.
Time is going down, but they're getting down there, and I looked up at the board, and then I looked over, and Zach Shaw's sitting like five seats down, and I was like, hey, Zach, they have three timeouts. And he just like, oh, God. And was just like, so you knew they were going to score a touchdown, and then they're going to have their three timeouts. And so, but then after Michigan gets the two sacks, they have to use one before fourth down. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, now that changes a lot of things because it adds 40 seconds. And so then they don't even convert. Michigan gets the ball back. They're starting to run the clock out. And then that's when the timeouts are used. And then they get a first down. And he calls a timeout after the first down with like a minute to go. That is a weepy timeout.
I accept your judgment in this regard, O King of sad determination.
I will say, and this will be an emotional statement, but when I was at the Orange Bowl after Michigan turn the ball over, I guess, or somehow Florida State ended up with the ball and had two timeouts left, and there was like 50 seconds left, and Harbaugh called two timeouts, and someone says, why are they calling two timeouts? And I said some words I shouldn't repeat, but those were sad timeouts too. So
that's a little different because it's like you're down 3 points,
yeah,
instead of 14,
one score.
Yeah, and they're like, if some crazy thing happens and they
Herm Edwards
the ball,
fumble return, yeah.
If so there's like the vaguest possibility you could win this game. When you're down two touchdowns, that's a full sad timeout.
Yes.
The other ones are futilely defiant timeouts.
Defeat with dignity timeouts.
Ain't no dignity, me a Spartan. All right, let's talk to Jamie.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest and HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop at the different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Blog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm torn between what my opening clip should be. Should I go with how's Michigan going to cover Rondell Moore in the Big Ten championship game, or should I go with Michigan State's going to need a whole hell of a lot more than 1.8 yards per play to beat the Boilers next week?
Oh, those are really nice. Actually, I'm a little scared of Rondell Moore. More than a little scared. I guess let's start with that incredible, insane game where Rondell Moore has 12 catches for 170 yards. Purdue beats Ohio State 49-20 despite Dwayne Haskins throwing 73 times for 470 yards, as Ohio State puts up 98 plays to Purdue's 72 in a bonkers Ross-Ade Stadium where, you know, there's the cancer kid from game day, and it all just comes together for Purdue in a way that everybody in that stadium is going to remember probably for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, a fascinating night in West Lafayette. You know, a week after Minnesota hit 15 of their mere 56 snaps for 10 or more yards, Purdue had 23 plays last night out of their 72 that went for 10 or more yards, almost one out of every three. We've been talking about this all year, how Ohio State's giving up big plays. They're now next to last in the Big Ten in plays given up of 10 or more yards. Only Illinois is worse. But in Ohio State's defense, Illinois has played one more game, so they've got that going for them. And you spoke of Rondell Moore. He had 10 of those plays last night alone. Just a phenomenal freshman. He's already been well talked about. And that's got to be like one of the most undefendable plays right now in the Big Ten. Just a short pass to him, you know, kind of in the flat. And he's got the speed to get to the corner and turn it into a big play. And as we've seen a few times this year, you know, you're about to bring him down after about 15 or 20 yards, and he could just kind of run through those tackles still. I mean, he is just amazing to watch.
He's an all-Big Ten player already. He's probably, is he an All-American? Kind of feels like it. Like, what slot receiver in the country do you want other than Rondell Moore?
Well, yeah, I mean, he could be an All-American. He's definitely in contention for Big Ten offensive MVP.
Seriously.
He might be splitting votes with his own teammate, David Blau, at this point. But
yeah, the crazy thing is that they're not zoning at all. Like, it's just, I think Wade was chasing him around all night, and he can't do that. Like, he made a couple of tackles, but, like, he's just getting torched on these drag routes the whole time, and, like, they're not offering any help. They're not trapping and having a the issues Michigan is having with slants have been addressed by Don Brown. And Greg Schiano is just watching Rondell Moore go nuts and does nothing.
Jeff Braun is a great play caller, and he's got a lot of weapons here. So, I mean, what could Schiano have really done? I mean, you know, Rondell Moore was obviously the star last night, but, you know, Isaac Zito's had 100-yard games this year. They got a pair of tight ends that are seemingly always open as well whenever they want to go to him. And unlike a lot of these Big Ten teams that just throw the ball all of a sudden this year with no running attack, Purdue, you know, you got to account for DJ Knox. So there's a lot going on out there. And, you know, Schiano just had no answers, but a lot of people are having no answers for Purdue.
Speaking of teams that just throw the ball all around, Haskins, 73 attempts is a record for Ohio State by 21 attempts.
Yeah.
And, you know, Weber has 45 rushing yards. You know, they managed to get up to 550 yards by the end of this game, but they have 6 points until, like, deep into the fourth quarter. This was a really weird, because, like, Haskins, when he throws, it's always on point. It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And then they have 3 points at halftime against Purdue, and I just don't know how. I mean, they had some turnovers and some red zone issues, but it was just, it was shocking.
They missed a field goal.
Yeah.
They had almost 40% of their yards on some of those final drives of the game when things got kind of crazy there. But it was 28-6 when that sequence happened. He was on pace to tie the program record for passing attempts at halftime, and they just cranked it up a notch in the second half with passing attempts. The weekly sequence where JT, you know, oh well, JT Barrett's not around anymore. Too bad, guys. 21-6, first and goal, 2 rushes into the line that went nowhere, and then a third down scramble by Haskins. He's not a statue back there, but he has no scrambling instinct. And then they threw a fourth down slant pattern in traffic that was going nowhere, even if it was caught. You know, and I mean, I feel like that's a sequence where, and probably a couple others, but that's the one that I remember because it was 21-6 at that point, and the Buckeyes could get that comeback going with a touchdown there. You know, that's JT's legs. That's definitely probably a touchdown there after a first and goal situation.
Oh, absolutely. The play call on fourth down was just, man, it's a different world for Ohio State.
Yeah. And then the very next time they had the ball, they punted in Purdue territory, so Urban was spooked.
The thing that it's just kind of really...
Against Purdue's defense, Urban was spooked.
Yeah, the thing to me that is just... Like, they just don't want to quarterback run, and the last time that happened with Ohio State was probably, like, 2003?
Todd Beckman? They had, like, some injury issues.
I'm not talking about that. Like, they've game planned to try to run with a quarterback since 2003, and now they have to sit there and be a pocket-passing team?
And when they did have those injury issues and the white guys came in a few years ago, their offense just fell off a cliff. And it's partially because, you know, those guys weren't good quarterbacks, but it's also because, you know, this team is built around having an 11 versus 11 run game.
And that's why, that's what has made Urban Meyer such a great coach for years and years and years, is his spread to run concepts. And now all of that has been set on fire,
I guess.
Yeah. Well, they're throwing it obviously a little bit more on standard downs this year, but on passing downs, they've gone from a run rate of just under 40% to a run rate of 26.4. Now, that's before this week gets added in. I didn't go through the play-by-play, but those numbers are going to be obviously even more extreme this week. And, you know, they were comfortable running the football in 2nd and 9 with JT Barrett. And a lot of times they would get a first down, whether it was, you know, the, you know, quarterback draw up the middle or just run play with the running backs.
Their whole
play calling sequence has radically changed.
There's some, like, base level of we're just running the ball because we're giving up and punting in those passing down numbers. So, like, the difference between 40% and 26% is actually even more stark.
Yeah.
And a lot of those runs weren't like, oh, we're doing something dumb because we just want to get it in a short yard. It's like, we can pick up 9 yards with JT Barrett.
Yeah.
On this play.
Well, Northwestern actually has a higher run rate on passing downs than Ohio State did coming into this week.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we'll get into Northwestern really briefly later, but they against Rutgers, they ran the ball a lot more than they passed the ball. So those numbers will be even different, more extreme.
So this is just a new Ohio State.
It is. And they're obviously still a good team, but they're not a juggernaut.
Like, yeah.
Is Michigan going to be a pick'em in this game? I mean, it's on the road, but if you look at fancy stats now and if you look at just the way these teams are playing...
I mean, their defense can be had.
Their defense is bad. Their defense is outright bad.
Well, it's scary to say that.
I mean, I was going through some of their blogs here this morning, on Sunday morning, and then I'm seeing write-ups of worst linebacking core in Ohio State history.
Probably not true, but
yeah. I mean, yeah, I can't go back throughout their different linebacking cores and attest to the accuracy there. But I'll take their word for it.
I mean, that's a fan base that has not learned how to deal with adversity.
No.
So they're probably just dying today.
What adversity?
That's what I'm saying. They haven't adapted. Speaking of adversity, overcoming it, Northwestern 18, Rutgers 15. There are still 11 conference rooms at the Ann Arbor Residence Inn downtown.
Well, there was a bulldozer that drove by. Yeah. I didn't know where he was going.
So Northwestern 18, Rutgers 15. Good God.
Yeah.
Neither team gets to 300 total yards in this game. No interceptions for Sitkowski, though, so that's something. God, what a disgusting game.
It was 3.4 yards per play to 3.3 yards per play. It was gross.
Oh, my God.
It was
just
gross. And Northwestern, they had a running back yesterday, Isaiah Bowser.
Bowser, yeah.
Who hadn't had a carry all year and had 24 carries for 180 yards in this game. And they had 37 carries from three different tailbacks. And those guys had 5 carries coming into this game combined on the season. That's pretty much all I can say about the game, other than the fact that Northwestern they wasn't a typical Northwestern game. They ran the ball 47 times to 34 passes. I kind of thought that might happen because, Rutgers, that's the tonic for bad running games. You know, that's where you go to fix your running game. So I thought they'd probably work on that a little bit. But there were 25 drives in this game, and there were 16 punts. And there were 2 turnovers, a missed field goal, and a safety.
Yeah, I don't get what's happening with Thorson, because he was dealing against Michigan State, and it kind of felt like he'd come through that ACL injury and was kind of rounding into a draftable quarterback, maybe not a first-round quarterback, and he's got 4.4 yards in attempt against Rutgers.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, the weather was bad everywhere at Big Ten sites with wind, but frankly, I think the weather at the Rutgers game was probably the best set of circumstances, compared to what we saw at Michigan State, compared to the wind in Iowa and the snow in Wisconsin. So there were definitely weather factors, but there were definitely worse conditions across the conference. Flynn Nagel had another big game, but they really had a hard time developing other threats other than Nagel. A guy here and there will come up and make a big play, but there's been no consistent other targets, and they haven't been able to run the football all year. Jeremy Larkin still is still their leading rusher by over 200 yards on the season. So it's pretty much just Clayton Thorson over and over again. And in those conditions yesterday, that's just not going to produce great stats.
Iowa 23, Maryland 0. I mean, we went through this with Maryland. They're a team that gets big plays or nothing. And in this game, they got nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, 115 total yards. That's it. That's all.
Yeah.
Wasn't the worst in the Big Ten.
Remember earlier in the year when they played Temple, we talked about that game might be the worst offensive performance, non-Rutgers division in the conference, when they had 3 and outs on their first 8 drives through 3 quarters. Well, yesterday their longest drive, this competes with it. Their longest drive yesterday was 28 yards. They only ran 2 plays in Iowa territory all game, and one of those ended with an interception. 9.3 yards per possession and 2.9 yards per play. Iowa ran 76 plays to Maryland's 39. And you talk about the big plays, Maryland led the league coming into the week in runs of 20 or more yards. They didn't have any against Iowa. And they had 49 runs of 10 or more yards coming into the game, and they only had 3 versus the Hawkeyes. So Iowa closed them down, and this is a team that's got a real solid chance at double-digit wins.
Yeah, I mean, it was really windy, I think. So Stanley was only 3.9 yards an attempt, and it was a very just kind of ugly ground-based game, because I think this was in Iowa, and it was just one of those 30-mile-per-hour wind days.
Oh, yeah. I think the winds were even worse than that. During the game, they were talking about 40 miles per hour, and once Iowa got the lead, just the way their defense was playing, you could just see that they weren't going to throw the ball at all with Stanley. They didn't need to. Ivy Kelly Martin had a really had a solid game, you know, 24 carries, 98 yards. It's obviously not the best yards per carry, but, you know, he's been battling ankle and concussion issues all year, and they've really been missing out on a lead tailback to go with Stanley and those tight ends all year. So maybe that's something to look out for in November. But Iowa's defense, that's impressive. You know, they're allowing 79.7 yards per game rushing. And in the four previous times under Kirk Ferentz that they've allowed less than 100 yards rushing on defense, they have a combined record of 40-11 in those four seasons, and they have two co-Big Ten titles out of those 4 years. So there's a lot going on, but it's kind of under the radar there in Iowa City.
Yeah, and they've got two good tight ends, and they've got a hyphenated skill player, always a good thing for Iowa.
Oh, yeah, always. They're a young team. They're a young team, and especially if Stanley comes back for a senior year, they could be interesting. You know, they're on Michigan's home schedule next year.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about having Michigan State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State all at home, but they've got Iowa coming to town too next September.
That'll be a season ticket worth having.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Wisconsin 49, Illinois 20 in a game that was played half in a snowstorm.
So yeah, that was cool.
There's a bunch of fumbles. Hornibrook threw some absolutely terrible interceptions at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jonathan Taylor gets back on the horse, 27 for 159. You know, the Illinois offense has occasional spurts, but they just get one touchdown on a reverse field run from, I'm just going to call him Corbin Dallas because I just want to. His last name's Corbin. It's not mm-hmm. Corbin Dallas. But, you know, pretty much what you'd expect from Wisconsin-Illinois with the intervention of some weather.
Yeah, I enjoyed how the snowstorm part of the game coincided with the Michigan-Michigan State delay.
Yes, because it was like
sort of like I did not know what to do when that delay happened, and all of a sudden there was a snowstorm game on my TV, and I was just like, all right, I'm good. I can breathe a little bit and watch. And that was the competitive part of the game because, you know, Hornibrook and Illinois, they were comparing dirt plays. And finally, Wisconsin got some breathing room at the end of the first half. Did you see the Hornibrook pass that was so wayward that it actually forced a targeting penalty?
No, I don't. I think I missed that one.
I think I saw the replay.
Yeah, he threw a duck over the middle that just it looked like a patented Hornibrook pick, but the Illinois guy got to the receiver too quickly and plowed right.
Oh, they overturned that. I did see that. They overturned.
Oh, that's right. There was a defensive holding on the line in that play. That's why that drive got extended. Good job fixing my memory, as always. But still.
Yes.
But still.
I mean, that reminded me of the Penn State targeting in the big blowout game where all the linebackers were gone, and then they had a guy who was going for the ball, and I think it was Perry, was also going for the ball, and their helmets hit, and they ejected that guy. But they shouldn't have, because to target someone, you actually have to be targeting them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was just going for the ball. Same one in this one, and they got it right. That was probably the most interesting part of this game after the snowstorm stopped.
Right, right. So, Wisconsin, they play Northwestern next week. They still play Purdue and Northwestern. So where are you guys as far as the, you know, Wisconsin easy path to the Big Ten title game? Does it seem harder to you guys now?
Well, they got to go to Penn State.
Oh, they still do that, too. Good add-in, Dave. Right on.
And they play.
Yeah, I thought this has been a race all year, so I'm waiting for people to jump on the bandwagon with me. So I actually forgot about that Penn State.
It's a race
Iowa,
now.
Iowa also has to go to Penn State.
And Iowa already has a loss to Wisconsin.
And so I was going to say, I mean, before yesterday, I was going to say that it's going to come down to which Big Ten West team plays better at Penn State. But now both these teams have to play Purdue.
Yeah.
So maybe the Big Ten West is, like, exciting again?
What part of the Wisconsin secondary is checking Rondale Moore?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they will run zone, so maybe they'll do a little bit better with that, but it could be interesting.
And, you know, Iowa's defense is really good, but it's a little unsettled. They've run in a ton of players at linebacker and DB, and they've got two freshmen that have taken over at cornerback, at both their cornerback spots. So, I mean, you know, they've emerged, but, you know, I think that's definite edge Rondale Moore in that matchup next month, too.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue hosts both of Iowa and Wisconsin. So
there's a
lot of checks and balances going here.
It's going to be rocking time in Ross-Ade Stadium this fall. I feel good.
Well, I mentioned last week that I thought if that the Boilermakers somehow managed to split against Ohio State and Michigan State, that they would be there in that Wisconsin game with a chance at it.
They might get a sweep.
bizarrely, they're chasing a Northwestern tiebreaker, and we totally want to discount the Wildcats. But would anybody be shocked if a week from now we're talking about like a 16-12 outcome in that Wisconsin Northwestern game with whomever is the luckiest winning?
I feel like Northwestern has beaten Wisconsin the last few years in like a ridiculous weather game too.
I'm not going with the team that just beat Rutgers by 3. I'm just not. This isn't even like a good Rutgers.
No.
How do you play Rutgers?
Good Rutgers? What do you
play? Like vaguely competitive Rutgers. Yeah. Well, like Rutgers, like a couple years ago, we were losing conference rooms left and right.
Right.
And we have not. Anyway, Penn State 33.
They still, you know, that's the thing with Purdue. They still have that. They are down a tiebreaker to Northwestern, but Northwestern, as you just detailed, they probably won't. They obviously are going to be huge underdogs against Wisconsin, and those Iowa games are always pretty funky. But this definitely looks like a year where Iowa will get that game. So I think that that tiebreaker will eventually go out the window. So the world needs Northwestern though to somehow become competent here in the next 2 weeks, because you know we need some drama with Wisconsin. But they host Notre Dame on November 3rd.
What?
Yeah.
Somebody. Slip Austin Carr back in the lineup.
All right, Penn State 33, Indiana 28 in a classic Indiana game where they take a third quarter lead against a ranked opponent and then immediately give up a 95-yard kick return. They outgain Penn State by over 100 yards in this game and still manage to lose. McSorley has 6.1 yards in attempt but rushes for 100 yards. Miles Sanders has a decent, not great day. The defense did an okay job, but... they were stabbed in the back by a couple of turnovers in that kickoff return.
Two kickoff returns. Penn State had a big kickoff return to open the game, by KJ Hamler. That set up a short field. So, you know, there's always something that Indiana is really bad at that betrays them in these games. Well, there's always two things they're bad at. One, they're always bad at catching on their scoring opportunities. And then there's always a random second thing they're bad at that tortures them in these games. And yesterday that was not being able to tackle on kickoffs. They gave them a 5-yard touchdown drive there in the second half because of a big kickoff. So,
and that wasn't even Hamler. Like, they kicked it to the other guy.
Yeah, that was Justin Thompson, something like that, some senior. He's not much of a contributor otherwise.
Yeah, that's like Hawkins ripping off a 95-yard kickoff return.
We can dream. IU ran 100 plays yesterday, guys.
What?
100 plays.
This is like a callback to Chaos Team.
A little bit. I mean, they actually looked really good. You know, we were, you know, well, I was the only one on it, but the Stevie Scott bandwagon was getting a little sparse.
we were pushing it along.
We were observing from a distance.
You guys were able contributors there. But 26 carries, 138 yards. That's the best he's looked since the Virginia game. So good job, Penn State.
That is some good news for Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was ripping off solid first down runs. You know, I mean, that's why I was so excited after that Virginia game, because, you know, the Cavs were in a bowl game last year, and, you know, that's kind of what Indiana's measuring themselves against. You know, I mean, just other mediocre bowl teams from Power 5 leagues. And, you know, we hadn't seen that. It was only 3.6 yards per carry in his previous four Big Ten games. And that includes an effort against Rutgers. So 5.3 yesterday against Penn State.
All right. Anything more on this game there, Jamie?
Well, I mean, just to detail the missed opportunities for Indiana, just this year alone, against Michigan State, they had 6 scoring opportunities to Michigan State's 4 and still lost by 14 points. Against Iowa went 6 for 6 for touchdowns in their scoring opportunities, while Indiana went 2 for 6 on touchdowns. So the same amount of scoring opportunities in a critical 5 factor. And Iowa outdid them 7 points to 2.83. And yesterday, you know, in a game that could have gone either way, they turned it over and downs it to 10. They fumbled at Penn State's 23. Just typical. Typical. But here's the thing with Indiana. They're basically like a MAC team. you know, I could probably just end the sentence right there, but I'm going to keep going. They're basically like, you know, a MAC team that has these ridiculously hard September schedules, so they start the year like 0-3 or 0-4, and then they have to star against their league, which they can, but there's no very little margin of error to get the bowl eligibility. Well, here's where Indiana's real season starts. You know, they got Minnesota coming up this week, and they still play Maryland. They can get those two games. They'll probably be in a bowl game. I usually would put Purdue up there, but there's no way they're beating Purdue. But who knows? Maybe they'll have 5 wins and they'll still have a shot there. But so their season begins Friday night here against Minnesota. And what a perfect night, Friday night, for Minnesota and Indiana to play a football game.
Speaking of Minnesota and Nebraska, Nebraska is no longer the best winless team in the country. They're the best one-win team in the country after a 53-28 gouging of the Gophers. Right. Nebraska puts up 659 yards of offense. Minnesota responds with almost 500 of their own. A lot of that was kind of gathered late after Nebraska had pulled off a fairly insurmountable lead. And then Nebraska would get the ball back and keep scoring.
Yeah.
Adrian Martinez is 25 of 29 for 9.5 yards in attempt and chips in 125 rushing yards. Yep. Scott Frost is going to be just fine, Nebraska people.
I think so. And, you know, they had 3 100-yard rushers yesterday because Zigbo had 152 and Maurice Washington, the freshman, had a 109. Only the fifth time in program history and the first time since 2010 that has happened. And the yards per play, 9 yards per play for Nebraska. Minnesota had 6.6 on their own a week after having 7.1 over Ohio State. So maybe something is slowly happening there. I don't know.
They're playing bad defense.
It might not be happening either. 11 of the 24 drives in this game went for at least 68 yards.
Jeez. This is like the opposite of the Northwestern game.
Yeah. I don't know where, you know, I think Nebraska is definitely in good hands with Frost. They just kind of have to get through this sort of weird period. But where are we with Minnesota and Fleck? You know, we pulled out the year zero rhetoric last year, and I mean, this is kind of barely developing into like a year half after a somewhat promising start in September. That game last week, like, how did they keep it close against Ohio State? That might be the new how did Rutgers keep it close against Iowa a couple years ago, like that, because they've been terrible otherwise.
Yeah, I mean they had a lot of running back injuries, and
yeah,
I think their offensive output the last few weeks is promising, but their defense has just been abominable.
Yeah,
and I don't know what they're going to do about that.
That game is on Friday. It's probably going to be for a bowl game because Minnesota does get Illinois, but then they'll have Northwestern with maybe a shot. You know, you never really know in those situations, but both teams probably need that Friday game to make it to the postseason.
It's exciting.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. The winner will have 5 wins, right, going into November, and they'll have their chances. I feel like Minnesota might even have a better chance just because I think that just because Northwestern plays so many ugly close games that I feel like they're going to have a shot in that game, you know? But
Minnesota needs 3.
Indiana, though, I mean, I don't know. If they're still stuck on 5 wins going into Purdue, they're dead.
Any comments on the Michigan-Michigan State game there?
No, not really.
All right.
I was happy they won. That was just, you know, Chase Winovich talks for me.
What an excellent thing to end on there, Jamie. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Can you do me a favor? Please hold this L.
Who's got it better than us?
No!